Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'd like to wish you all a very happy and peaceful New Year. Coming up in a few moments, a timely and hopeful reflection as we make our New Year's resolutions. How the Romans envisaged New Year. And as Christmas is still with us, why not enjoy a musical comment on some of our most popular carols? Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. I'd like to begin today, as I mentioned a moment ago, by looking ahead to the new year. That's with Monsignor Peter Fleetwood.
My brother and I have played some terrible tricks on my father over the years. One day, we went for a drink in a village pub. I took Colin over to the jukebox and chose a record. He said to my dad, "This song is for you." Dad was so furious when he heard the words, "You're so vain," that he missed the irony of the next words, "I bet you think this song is about you." But my father is not the only one it has annoyed. Carly Simon, who composed the song, refused to say who inspired her, and many former boyfriends have felt threatened by such a public rebuke. Carly has another song that is very appropriate as we weigh up the year that is just about to end and the new one about to begin. It starts with an image of a young couple with a baby. She describes the scene as romantic, but at the same time bewildering. As the song goes on, the intensity of the phrase, "I'm so in love with you," reveals all is not well. But the chorus is shot through with realism and hope. "I know nothing stays the same, but if you're willing to play the game, it's coming around again. So don't mind if I fall apart, there's more room in a broken heart." As a priest, I have found myself making coffee late at night, or dishing out paper handkerchiefs to people at difficult times in their marriages or relationships. Sadly, it has sometimes been a one-way route to a divorce or separation. I know from my own experience that there are moments at work, at home, or in important friendships where everything seems to be about to fall apart. As Carly Simon puts it, we ourselves can fall apart. It can be a moment of desperation, disorientation, fear, and self-loathing. What has this got to do with New Year? Well, to start with, one simple fact frightens people in my own country. There are more dangerous domestic incidents at Christmas than at any other time. It could be that we're no longer used to spending much time together. This can leave us unprepared for some of the normal friction that occurs when human beings are cooped up together for a while. It is also quite possible that we drink far too much. Perhaps we realize we have become superficial in the way we relate. There must be all sorts of other reasons too. Sadly, New Year can be a terrifying anticlimax to a period that has revealed problems we had buried or never even recognized. Something else about New Year can be unsettling. The newspapers, the television and the radio, even the priest in church, have us reviewing the past 12 months. It can be dispiriting to have to face our failures or to revisit the difficult moments in the past year, the day I lost my job, the day my mother died, the day my parrot fell off his perch for the last time. It can be the time when we think, what a rotten year, all those resolutions we made and never kept. We fail, basically. Nothing stays the same. We miss the people who are no longer here. So why should we bother trying when we always seem to screw up, as the saying goes? I said Carly Simon's song was shot through with realism and hope. But why? First of all, one thing about New Year is looking into the future realistically and seeing it as a time for fresh opportunities. If you're willing to play the game, it's coming around again. Despair and presumption were the number one sins when I was at school. Both of them are unrealistic. And a lot of the negative feelings people can have at the end of a year blind them to all the chances they have to do things differently next time around. The first year after someone dies brings back the memories of what we would all have been doing this time last year. But what would that dear person want us to be doing or thinking? Probably not moping. Hope is in Carly's picture of a broken heart. Why? Because she is asking us to laugh at ourselves. The thing that saves us from ourselves is a sense of humour. Don't mind if I fall apart. There's more room in a broken heart. A hard heart is locked shut. A broken heart needs tender love and care. But nobody, not even God, can help if you don't invite them in. Go on. Happy New Year.
And a big thank you there, as always, to Monsignor Peter Fleetwood, parish priest at St Joseph's Blundell Sands in the Liverpool Archdiocese. And now, on a lighter note, we join our popular Latin lover, Carmelite, Father Reginald Foster, to hear how the Romans envisaged New Year.
Father, you have your tome of Leo the Great. He was one who spoke out against pagan Christmas, didn't he?
Yes, because the pagan customs were still very strong. This is 100 years after Christmas.
And pagan habits in the New Year.
Oh, yeah.
So his New Year resolutions. Tell me about Leo the Great's New Year
resolutions.
All
you should read on Leo the Great, where he says we should concentrate not on stupid penances and things, but on good works. Works of charity, you can believe it.
How do you say that in Latin? How do you say New Year's resolutions?
Well, novi anni proposita.
It's like turning a new leaf. They have no expression like that, the Latins. I caught you out there. How do you say turning a new leaf?
Well, you say vertere paginam, change the page. Vertere paginam, okay, you can change the page. It novum incipere annum, and begin a new year.
Did they actually...
They didn't think in those terms.
They didn't think in those terms.
Like New Year's resolutions, not too, no, they didn't have that. The Romans didn't.
But they had a different calendar, we know that. So they wouldn't have celebrated New Year when we do anyway.
No. Although their government offices began January 1st.
So it was the beginning of the new parliamentary year.
Yeah, I mean, that was like their fiscal, or what should I say, legal year was January 1st, that much they realized.
How do you say that in Latin?
Tantum intellects erunt.
What does that mean?
So much they understood, munias incipienda esse calendis januarius, that the offices must be begun on the 1st of January.
They had a very sophisticated system, legal system, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Roman law.
Which has come down to us today.
Well, I don't know, to us. It depends on where I'm talking. The English, American
thing. We have the common law.
Yeah, which is not so much.
Here in Italy, they still have Roman law.
Oh, yeah, that's on the continent. The Anglo thing is not so much Roman. You say that your common law. Yeah. But all the other countries, and that means South America and everything.
How would you say common law?
Well, jus commune.
And whereas Roman law, how did they call it?
Well, that was lex romana, lex romana. Which, they're using, other nations are using that.
Did they have any special ways to celebrate the opening of the parliamentarians' year?
No, there was like an oath and people were there. No, it wasn't different. The Romans didn't do things like that too much.
They were kind of
They would have a sacrifice or something, for the blessing of the gods.
Was this sacrifice? How did it take
place? They would have an animal or something like that up in Jupiter's altar there on the Capitoline Hill. And I have a book that I'm going to read now during Christmas all about the prayers in Virgil and Livy. Beautiful, beautiful, interesting.
Like prayers for sacrifice.
Prayers of anything. Oaths and prayers and petitions. And
what did they speak about?
Well, they had the same thing. It's notable or extraordinary. I mean, they're humans like ourselves. And so they were asking for good weather. They were asking for peace. They were asking for good health and prosperity.
So how would you say
that? That's that famous thing where you say the famous expression, you know, mens sana in corpore sano. Well, that's part of what Juvenal says.
A healthy mind in a healthy body.
Yes, and he says people shouldn't go around and ask the gods for strange things. They should go to a shrine and ask the gods that there may be for them a healthy mind and a healthy body. That's how where the expression comes in. It's very nice, the whole context. Because the context is you shouldn't be praying for nonsense. Huh?
How do you say nonsense in Latin?
Nuje, ineptie, okay.
Inept.
Yeah, ineptie, things which are out of place. Nugai, frivolities, frivolities, or whatever you're going to call them. No, but and so that was very serious. And so he said you should go to church instead of praying for all this nonsense, or even about helping or killing your brethren and all that stuff. Go and pray that you may have a healthy mind and a healthy body. That's what you should ask of the gods. So to see the Roman prayers is really, really very beautiful.
Did they ask for peace?
Certainly, because like at Cicero's time, they had 100 years of civil war around here. And they were plenty tired of that too.
Pax
Romana was coming out slowly with Augustus.
But they were warriors, though, the Romans, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, they went through 132 until 31 B.C., 101 years, practically, of civil war.
And which came to an end with Augustus.
Yeah, and Mark Antony and Cleopatra, that whole thing, you know, where she takes off in her ship and you know, all that stuff. We've seen movies of that before.
How'd you say movies? Movies?
Cinematografeum. So, Jan Wiedem was Spectacula Cinematografica de Earea concerning that matter.
Little did Cleopatra know how much her story would inspire the cinema world.
Oh, Lord, yes. No, I mean, she didn't. She didn't know that. But anyway, so as I say, they prayed for peace. Certainly they prayed for peace. And all that stuff to see there, it's very, very beautiful. We think there's, you know, pagans and they're stupid and don't have any idea and don't have faith and stuff. Certainly they had faith. Or they were worshipping statues. They didn't worship any statues. That's nonsense. And the fact is, Cicero has a famous thing in one of his Philippics. He says, we should go to the gods whose earthly images we see around the place. So there's...
Distinction. How do you say that in Latin? We should worship the gods whose earthly images...
Okay, veneramur deos quorum simulacra terrestria...
We see around the place.
Circum nos ubique videmus. Mm-hmm. And so really, he's not saying that we're worshiping this statue, which a lot of people think. And a lot of Christians thought the same thing, idol worship, and they did not worship idols. What are you talking about? And they believed there was a god behind it somewhere. But the Romans had statues, and they believed there was a god somewhere, and this was a representative of that god. That's all.
How do you say that in Latin?
Alicubi Deum esse credimus. We believe God is somewhere. Alicubi Deum esse credimus.
Can I ask you one last thing? What's New Year message to our listeners in Latin?
New Year's message. Utinam feliciter vobis et prospere hic annus procedat.
Can you translate that?
Utinam feliciter vobis et prospere hic annus procedat. I wish that, I would that, I hope that this year may move ahead forward for you. Feliciter happily and prosperously.
And heartfelt thanks there go to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite, Father Reginald Foster, who's currently teaching in the United States, but was for many years papal Latinist. Finally, although Christmas Day has come and gone, Christmas is still with us for another week. So why not enjoy a musical comment on some of our most popular carols, the best-loved form of sacred music, comments our music historian, Monsignor Philip Whitmore.
To us a child is born. The joyful news of Christ's birth has inspired Christians throughout the centuries to sing the praises of God. Christmas carols are among the best loved of all forms of sacred music. In England, carols were very popular in the later Middle Ages. One of the few that has survived more or less intact over the centuries is the Coventry Carol. Many carols use folk melodies, so it's quite hard to say just how old they are. In their present form, they're usually from the 19th or 20th centuries. That's to say, they were discovered and arranged for publication and popular use in recent times. One of the great pioneers of research into English folk song was a man called Cecil Sharp. Here's a Christmas carol that he discovered for us at Chipping Campden in Gloucestershire. Another important figure in the rediscovery of English folk songs was Ralph Vaughan Williams. He was also interested in hymns. In fact, he composed a number of well-known hymns himself, and he edited the English Hymnal. One of the Christmas carols we associate with him uses a folk melody that he discovered in Sussex, still known today as the Sussex Carol. After the Reformation in England, carol singing more or less died out. Certainly there was no place for carols in the Reformed liturgy, because it was forbidden to sing non-scriptural texts in church. This meant no hymn singing at all, except for the Psalms. One of the first Christmas carols to establish itself in England after the Reformation was While Shepherds Watched. And of course, if you look closely at the text, you'll see that it's practically all taken from St. Luke's Gospel. So it was the first Christmas hymn, and for more than 80 years, the only one permitted to be used in Anglican churches. Meanwhile, the English Catholic community was either underground or in exile on the continent. One of the major centres was Douai in Flanders. At the English College in Douai, priests were trained to serve on the English mission. And here came to birth one of the most famous of all Christmas carols, O Come All Ye Faithful, or Adeste Fideles, to use its Latin title. Both the words and the music are attributed to John Francis Wade, who was a professor there during the 18th century. It was first published in England in the 1780s, and it's been a firm favourite ever since. Thank you. Many of the carols we sing today are of German origin. In fact, so too are many of the traditions surrounding our celebration of Christmas, such as the Christmas tree or Tannenbaum. Like their Anglican counterparts, the Lutheran reformers encouraged hymn singing. Listen to the traditional German carol Es ist ein Rose entsprungen, associated with the 17th century Lutheran composer Michael Praetorius. One of the best loved of all German carols is In Dulci Jubilo. The text is half in Latin and half in German. J.S. Bach used the tune in a choral setting and also in some of his organ chorale preludes. But it's best known to English-speaking congregations in a 19th century arrangement by Robert Pearsall, which is half in Latin and half in English. Probably the best-known German, or rather Austrian, carol is Stille Nacht, or Silent Night. This was written on Christmas Eve 1818 for the village church in Oberndorf, just north of Salzburg. Since then, it's taken the world by storm. By the 19th century, hymn singing had come to be accepted in the Church of England. Members of the Wesley family produced many of the new hymn texts. Charles Wesley's Christmas hymn, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, was matched with a tune by Felix Mendelssohn to produce one of the best-loved of all Christmas carols. Mendelssohn had originally written the tune for secular words, and he wasn't sure it would work with a sacred text. He needn't have worried. Speaking of angels singing leads me on to one or two French Christmas carols. The French had their own tradition of Noël, as they were called, few of which are familiar to English speakers today. But I think you might recognise this one, adapted to English words.
Angels leave above.
Tried singing that Gloria after a few Christmas drinks. It's quite a challenge. Another popular French carol using a folk melody from the Provençal region is known as the March of the Kings. Now, if you're familiar with that tune, it could be because you've heard it in the version used by Georges Bizet in his suite L'Arlésienne. Wherever you're spending Christmas, I do hope you'll have the opportunity to celebrate by singing some of the great heritage of carols that have come down to us over the centuries, from different countries, even from different continents. There's some very fine music among them, and how right that it should be so. Only the best is good enough to sing the praises of the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace.
And many, many thanks there to Monsignor Philip Whitmore, a music historian who's currently working as an official at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. And that brings me up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for joining me. I'd like to wish you all again a very happy and peaceful New Year. Laudetur Jesus Christus.